dreams just random images fired from an unconscious brain during sleep? Or something much more important, like life-saving inner guidance? How dreams can be healing and early warning tools for disease, financial crisis, or success? And love is still one of the behavioral science's greatest unanswered questions. Hello, I'm your host, author Kat O'Keefe Canavis. Welcome to Dreaming Healing, where dreams and cutting-edge scientific research meet on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Dreaming Healing is every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, when you can call in and ask Kat questions about your amazing dreams. Talk on air. Call toll-free 833-220-1200. That's 833-220-1200. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
Good evening, everyone. I am so glad you're here. This show is live, so you can use chat for any dream questions or dreams or nightmares, or you can call in and talk to one of us. We're right here for you tonight. So the last show last week was with guest Wake Up Women, Karen Mayfield. That was Wake Up Women, and we had... and she was the wow. And then we had Gina Rhoda, who Gina Rhoda was the wow, Women of Wisdom. And Karen Mayfield was Wake Up Women, woo. So it was quite a show between wow and woo. And they were talking about the afterlife and life after life. So it was pretty cool. We wanted to know, is death the end? And we had people call in and ask questions and talk about how they lost their loved ones who then came to them in dreams. And we even had someone call in with what I call a shared dream. She and her son, who was in another state, shared the dream of the father who had died. So that was pretty cool. So you can always go to my Dreaming Healing page on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network and catch the last shows that I did. So the title of our show tonight is Life, Journey, and Identity. And so, you know, life is a long and winding road filled with ups and downs, and how important is it to know when to move on and how to move on, and should we be using our kind of like our empathic abilities to help us with the changes that we need to make in our life to move forward? Now, originally we had three guests for tonight, but unfortunately two of them got sick with the flu. So we have Reverend Stephanie Redfeather with us tonight. She's still healthy, and I'm still healthy. So we're going to be talking to Stephanie about a couple of books that she's done just as soon as we finish our short protection meditation. Okay, so let's start the show tonight with my favorite protection and clearing meditation. And during this meditation, we're going to imagine using something that is small but, you know, powerful to you. Maybe something given to you in a dream by your guardian angel or your spirit guide, or a deceased loved one, like an amulet. So if you don't have one, it's okay. Imagine holding your favorite flower or a crystal or even a rock or a piece of jewelry in your hand, anything at all that holds the power of love for you. That's going to be your power gift. Okay, so sit comfortably, and if you're listening to this show right now on a radio, maybe in your car, don't close your eyes, all right? Just keep your eyes open. You can still be a part of this, and it will still work. So sit comfortably, and together, we're going to take three deep breaths in, and we're going to hold them while anything that is not of our highest and best is captured in that breath of life. And then we're going to blow it across the room into the purple flame of Saint Germain, where it will be converted into positive light and returned to the universe. Yep, we're not going to litter. Then we're going to build a protection bubble, a mirrored bubble around us with our power gift. So, like I said, sit, get kind of, you know, get comfortable. Ready? All right, close your eyes. Feel yourself relaxing, just kind of getting centered. Kind of move your back around a little bit. Sit deep into the seat. Then take in a deep breath. Hold it. Imagine any negativity attaching to it. Blow it across the room into the purple flame of Saint Germain. Okay, deep breath in again. Imagine any tiny specks of negativity, maybe something someone said to you or did to you, getting sucked into that breath. Now blow it out into that flame. One more time. Really deep breath in. Hold it and blow it out across the room into the purple flame of Saint Germain, where you see it turned into positive light and return to the universe. Now imagine your power gift in your hand and swing it around your head and your body to create a mirrored bubble of protection around you that only lets that which is of the highest and best and brought by your spirit guides or guardian angels into the bubble. Anything that else that is not of your highest and best is reflected back from whence it came. We wish it so, and therefore it is. When you're ready, slowly open your eyes. So our show tonight is going to be about two different books, and it's going to be with our guest, Reverend Stephanie Redfeather. She's the author of The Evolutionary Empath, and she's a contributing author to Chaos to Clarity, Sacred Stories of Transformational Change. And her book, The Evolutionary Empath, is published by the same publishing company I'm in, Inner Traditions, and it's distributed by Simon & Schuster. So we're going to be talking about being an empath, and we're going to be talking about an important story that she had in the book, Chaos to Clarity, Sacred Stories of Transformational Change, because the name of her story is It's Time to Go. So welcome to the show, Reverend Stephanie Redfeather.
Thank you so much, Kat.
So, Stephanie, tell us how you got the name Stephanie Redfeather. Are you part Native American Indian?
Well, not in this lifetime, although I have in many past. a number of years ago, I was working with one of my shamanic mentors doing a healing session, and I was standing on a sacred buffalo hide, and he was doing ceremony, and all of a sudden, I started having a vision, and I saw, a Native elder dancing in front of me with a full headdress. Every feather was red. And I realized in that moment that I was being given a name. And so I'm like, Gary, I think I'm being given a name. Here's what's going on. And he's like, yes. And so we created the ceremony to anchor that name into the earth grid. And so for many years, I used that name in spiritual circles. And when I got married in 2011, I still had my first husband's last name. Didn't want to take that into the marriage. I was complete with my maiden name. I no longer subscribe to the practice of taking my husband's last name, which he's cool with. And so I'm like, Spirit, I need a last name. They said, you got one. So when I got married, I legally changed my last name to Redfeather.
I love it. What a beautiful story. You know what's really interesting? Kind of connects us, Stephanie, besides the fact that we're with the same publisher. I had the dreams with the monks, and they handed me a white feather. In order to take the feather to my doctors, and they said, use it as though it were a sword to verbally fence with them when they give you all the reasons why they don't want to give you a second set of tests. And it worked. Those feathers are so strong.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I am very connected to the winged ones. So
the winged ones, I love that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your story in Chaos to Clarity. That's what we were going to do originally with this show tonight, but since we had to have a couple cancellations, and that's life in the fast lane, happens all the
mm-hmm.
time, you know, I've got you all to myself, just you and me tonight, and that's
yeah.
really kind of cool. I haven't done that in a long time. So your story was Time to Get Out, mm-hmm. and I want to know, Stephanie, how did you know when it was really time to get out of anything in your life?
Mm-hmm. Well, before my spiritual awakening, it usually took the metaphorical two before across the forehead, because I have a very, very strong will, and just did not have the ability to listen to myself or trust my intuition. And so that's kind of all, you know, reveals itself in the arc of my story. But the story that I contributed is specifically about getting out of the military. I was an Air Force officer for 10 years. And quite frankly, I'm surprised that I even heard the whisperings of my heart, because my heart had long been banished from the decision-making table. And, you know, there were some other factors that were coming into play as well. You know, so for example, I was an intelligence officer, and one of the things that they pretty much told us from the beginning is if you stay in long enough, you're going to do a 1-year remote somewhere, probably Korea, but somewhere. And, you know, just in learning more about myself and how I handled stress and what my values were and my priorities, you know, it just became clear, I don't want to do that. I'm not willing to do that. And it's not fair to stay in hoping that it won't happen to me while I watch it happen to my peers. And so that was another big driving factor, is there were things that I knew I was going to be asked to do that just didn't resonate with me. And so that was also part of the equation of choosing to leave the military.
That's a big step. You know, that to get out of the military, it sounds very easy, but it's really not, especially when you've been in as long as you were, because military life almost becomes a habit, but it's always also a security blanket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? Very much so.
So were you Stephanie Redfeather when you were in the military?
I was Stephanie Ross. You know, that was, yeah, that happened long after. I was married at the time to my first husband. So my last name was Roth.
Oh, okay. All right. So you decided it was time to get out of the military and make a big change. Was that easy for you? Did it just happen naturally and then everything just fell into place? Or did you find that you had to work at being a civilian?
Yeah, that would be a big negatory good buddy. That was that did not come easily. It was frankly excruciating because, you know, my spiritual awakening had not happened by, you know, at that point. And, you know, I don't know if we'll get into kind of the whole story of my life, but I was a very intuitive, creative child. Fast forward into adulthood, you know, I was a singer, a dancer, I went to performing arts school, I danced and sang on stage, I was in a dance company with the city. Fast forward a few years, I get a math degree and go into the Air Force. So, you know, I'm clear now in hindsight that there, you know, was an expunging of my feminine side through my high school years, and I can almost literally chart as the masculine expression increased, the feminine expression decreased. There's a reason for all of that. So I was very much living in my masculine energy by the time I hit adulthood, made decisions about what I was going to do and who I wanted to be. So I was still in that mindset, still operating very much from that principle when I left the military. And so I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew it was time to get out. So it wasn't like, hey, I know what's next. It's time to get out. It was, mm-hmm. I think it's time to get out. Ah, now what am I going to do? And my financial advisor, who was with the company that I had been with for 10 years, said, well, Steph, you're really good with people. Have you thought about being a financial advisor? And I kind of liken it to the first time someone of the opposite sex or whatever your persuasion is in grade school pays attention to you, like, oh, you like me? Okay, cool. I'll like you back. You know, so it was like, oh, you think I'll be good at this? Okay, I'll do that. You know, so there was no heart. There was no passion. And so I spent over a year going through interviews and preparing and saving up money and studying for my exams, thinking this is what I'm going to do for the next 10 or 15 years. And I quit in less than 6 months because I hated it. And that is what threw me full force into my spiritual awakening.
Mm. So you kind of came full circle. You were spiritually awake to a degree when you were a child, and then you put that into the closet somewhere when you hit high school, and then when you went into, into the Air Force. But I've got to ask you, because you are an empath, and you were probably born that way, I'm thinking, did you use it at all while you were in the Air Force? Because you were in intelligence. Were you feeling some of the stuff that you were doing rather than getting cold hard facts in front of you?
It didn't present in that way. I was unconscious of the fact that I was an empath. I didn't know that about myself. I knew I was sensitive, and I knew that I had been late, you know, that usually was negatively associated, like, you're too sensitive, you need to grow thicker skin, you know, those sorts of things. And so what I was very aware of, and especially looking back, is one of the characteristics of empaths is that it is very easy for us to blend and merge with other life forms, other sentient energies. And so I was taking on everybody else's energy around me and had no idea. So, you know, an example is I went to Saudi Arabia for 3 months and I was 25, no clue about any of this stuff, any of the spiritual stuff or any of my empathic abilities. And I mean, I took on the tensions. I felt all of it acutely, but it was debilitating. It was not something I knew how to take and manage or shield myself or even be able to discern what was mine from what wasn't.
That's interesting. So let's talk about your book that actually just came out. Was it this month, Stephanie, that it came out?
November 5th, actually. The time has flown.
Oh, my gosh. Has it been that long? Okay.
It has.
It came out about the same time as Chaos to Clarity. So it did. At the same time.
2 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It was and I turned 50 in November as well. So turning 50 and 2 books. It was a heck of a month.
Oh, my gosh. You had a full month then. So the name of... Stephanie, the name of your book is The Evolutionary Empath, A Practical Guide for Heart-Centered Consciousness. So tell me, how did you come up with the title for your book?
Yeah, well, that's not what it began as. I sat down and the title changed 3 times over the course of the whole process. And, Spirit kept giving me higher level pictures and kind of this really big picture context. And finally, because I was like, okay, can you guys just give it to me all at once so I don't have to keep reorganizing the book? and when they finally gave me the title, The Evolutionary Empath, I really got what it is that I'm here to share, the message that I was to bring through me. And that is that empaths are not a random occurrence. We are not a mistake. We are not an anomaly. There are more and more of us incarnating every day because it is time. In the grand cycle of human evolution and the ascension of consciousness, we are at a point in our evolution where it is time for empaths again. And we are here to help humanity ascend to the next level of consciousness.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. So we're all familiar with the term empath, but there are a lot of people, and I'm sure there are a lot of people listening right now, who don't really know what an empath empath is. They're going, oh, does that mean you're psychic, or that you can read tarot cards? They're not
right.
really sure. So we have about 1 minute before. No, we don't. We don't have 1 minute before we can go to break. We're going to break right
All
now.
Right.
And when we come back, we're going to find out exactly what an empath is. So, you know, don't go away. We're going to be right back. You are listening to Dreaming Healing on DreamVision7Radio.com. And I'm your host, Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas.
Ever had a strange dream? Nautilus Award winner, Dreams That Can Save Your Life, Early Warning Signs of Cancer and Other Diseases by Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas and Duke University radiologist Dr. Larry Burke, forward by Dr. Bernie Siegel, shares how people like you self-advocated in the face of adversity and won using dreams. Read life-saving dream stories validated by medical reports. Hear how dreams of dead loved ones saved lives. Use interpretations and journaling as roadmaps in your waking world for health, wealth, and love. Dreams That Can Save Your Life, Early Warning Signs of Cancer and Other Diseases. Buy the audio and book at KathleenO'KeefeCannabis.com in English and Italian worldwide and through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other retailers.
Omega Institute, offering workshops, retreats, and online learning dedicated to awakening the best in the human spirit. For over 40 years, Omega has seen more than 1 million people come through its doors to grow, learn, and find a greater sense of purpose. With over 350 workshops to choose from, Omega offers something for everyone. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org or call 877-944-2002. Again, 877-944-2002.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Kat O'Keefe Canavas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
Have you met your physician within yet? The Nautilus and multi-award-winning book, Surviving Cancerland, Intuitive Aspects of Healing, is a memoir that takes you down the rabbit hole of healing dreams and interpretations, mixed with conventional medicine and treatments. Listen to the hookah-puffing caterpillar ask, "Who are you?" Dr. Bernie Siegel says Kathleen's story is powerful, honest, and eye-opening. Surviving Cancerland, Intuitive Aspects of Healing by three-time breast cancer survivor Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas. Buy the book and audio at KathleenO'KeefeCannabis.com and worldwide through Amazon and other retailers.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Dreaming Healing on DreamVisions7Radio.com. I'm your host, Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas, but my friends all call me Kat, so I hope you will too. And we are here tonight with Reverend Stephanie Redfeather, PhD, and we're now talking about her new book, The Revolutionary Empath. And just before the break, I had asked Stephanie to explain to us what is the term empath, because not everybody knows it. So, Stephanie, what is an empath exactly?
Yes, and I will I'll give you the short version and the longer version. Because when I sat down to write this book, my spirit guide gave me only one directive, and that was create a definition. Because for a number of years, the term empath has been used kind of loosely in spiritual circles, consciousness circles, and most people seem to understand that it means a highly sensitive person. So that's kind of the the shorthand everyday version of what an empath means. But in the book, I actually spend two chapters breaking it down and looking at what an empath is from multiple different aspects. And so the part I'd like to share with you is kind of the meatiest and the aspect that most people can identify with. And it's what I call the five qualities of an empath. And so the first quality is something I mentioned a little bit ago. It's the ability to merge with and absorb the energy of other beings. And that's people, animals, anything with life force. I believe that everything out there is sentient and has some kind of consciousness. And so when we're unaware that we're an empath, when we're unaware that we have this ability to merge and blend, this is the quality that causes us to unconsciously take on other people's emotions and problems, and also causes us to struggle with boundaries. The second quality is that we have a highly sensitive nervous system. And so, you know, this might be kind of like, well, you know, duh, nervous systems are supposed to be highly sensitive. But as empaths, it's like somebody gave us a double dose. And so we feel everything acutely. And for each empath, what they're incredibly sensitive to can be a little different. For some people, it might be sound. Another, it might be light. Another, it might be electromagnetic frequencies, you know, any number of things. But it can cause us to really have to manage a lot of overwhelm and overstimulation. So extra vigilant self-care is really important for us. Mm-hmm. The third quality is the great sensitivity that we have to energies around us and an ability to perceive or access subtle information stored in the energy field of all types of life forms. And so, you know, going back to the fact that I believe everything is sentient and has consciousness, there are things communicating on multiple levels and multiple dimensions, you know, with subtle energies, not necessarily things that you can perceive with your five senses. And so this is the quality that makes it easy for us to see apparitions or angels or the dead, or, you know, or we're prone to maybe paranormal experiences or just wicked intuition, or some people are medical intuitives or channels or animal communicators, you know, all of these sorts of things where we're tuning into more subtle energetic fields. The fourth quality is the premium we place on peace and harmony, and that is in relationships, our environment, and our own energy field. And so, again, if we are unaware of this quality, we can tend to be doormats, not stand up for ourselves, be very codependent, because we will do anything and everything to keep our relationships and environment as stress-free and calm as possible. And the fifth quality is our big open hearts and a desire to serve others. And so oftentimes you'll see empaths, you know, they gravitate towards careers of service. I know a huge number of people in my tribe are energy healers and massage therapists and nurses and hospice workers and therapists and all of that sort. But, you know, clearly I was in the Air Force, so there's empaths that are bankers and computer programmers and that sort of thing as well. And this desire to serve others is, again, if we're unconscious, can cause us to overgive and put ourselves last on the list. And so we live from a depleted place a lot of times when we're unaware of this.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was on another show earlier today, and that was one of the things that the show host brought up. She talked about how she had become ill with cancer and how she really felt it was because she had depleted herself by giving all of her inner self away to everybody else because that was the way she was raised, you know. Mm-hmm. If you didn't do that, you were selfish. Mm-hmm. And she said she had to learn that, no, it's not being selfish when you hold some of it back for yourself. It's being smart. So, yes, I believe that a lot of empaths have a tendency to give until they realize that there's very little left for them. And then there's this awakening, I call it. And that's when, you know, they tend to be a little more grounded. But the empaths are, you know, if we look back to our childhood, we always remember that student in class that was quieter than everybody else, seemed to kind of shrink in the seat, yet seemed to understand and be very sensitive to everything that was going on around them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you talk about the human blueprint. What do you mean by that? What blueprint are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Do we all have one?
Well, there's a couple things I want to say to that. The first is I believe we're all born this way, that it is actually natural as human beings that we have these sensitivities and this ability mm-hmm. to communicate and perceive all of these subtle energies around us. But because of our culture that we live in and the current value system, for so many of us, those things are not valued. Or we're made fun of, or we're told that we're weak or too sensitive, or, you know, any number of things. And so depending on the messages that we internalize, we cut ourselves off and shut those things down and unplug those receptors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I believe at a soul level, we're making decisions when we're in spirit form about the next incarnation we're going to have. And I believe that these evolutionary empaths, the ones that are showing up now in particular, are making a choice at a soul level to show up with a highly sensitive, extra sensitive physiology, if you will. We show up mm-hmm. with a refined set of energetic sensitivities. And that's what I mean by the new human blueprint. I like to think that some number of centuries or millennia from now, that empath isn't even going to be a word, because it's going to be synonymous with human, that this is mm-hmm. where we're all headed. This is how we will all experience life and communicate with one another and perceive everything that's going on. But for now, we are the empathic Big Bang. In terms of geologic time, 100 years, a couple hundred years, is the blink of an eye. And so even 100 years ago, there were not many empaths on the planet, because the overall collective consciousness was not at a point that could really sustain that kind of physiology, if you will, or that way of relating to the world. And so there's a quote from the movie Moneyball that says, "The first guy through the wall always gets bloodied." And so all of us who are a part of this empathic Big Bang, we are the ones choosing at a soul level to come here on this planet and get bloodied, if you will, being the first ones through the wall, paving the way for the ones behind us. Because most of us did not have parents or teachers or extended family or, you know, church or whatever that understood our sensitivities, that recognized them, that knew how to guide us and knew how to have us hone our ability and set up our protections. And so this is, you know, I just believe we're the first wave.
You know, I think that you've hit something, you know, right on with that, because, you know, if you think about it, 200 years ago or so, if you were an empath, you were called a witch and burned at the stake. So mm-hmm. all of those empaths that were burned at the stake, I believe they may be coming back now, or they have been slowly coming back into the earth plane. And now, you know, I think there may be more than ever before. What are your feelings about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just the number of people waking up to this, recognizing that they have a slightly different set of perceptions than the people around them, or a different set of sensitivities. I absolutely believe there are more and more of us showing up on the planet every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when I was little, I could see auras. So when I was in kindergarten, I was coloring, you know, when you're coloring a page that has people on it, you envision those people as being your parents or somebody else. And so I would color outside the lines and I would color the auras. And I ended up being taken to the ophthalmologist and having my eyes checked by the principal and my parents. The principal called my parents in and said, you know, Kathy is not staying in the lines and she's coloring people crazy colors. And so when I went to the ophthalmologist, he checked my eyes and he said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with your eyes. And he wrote on the form that I was doing this just for attention. And he told me, he said, you don't do this for attention anymore. You color inside the lines only, and you color people the right colors. So when I was shocked that nobody else could see the colors I could see. I had no idea that they couldn't see them. So when I got back to school, I would take that black crayon and I would outline whatever it was I was coloring and stay right inside those black lines. And I'd look at all the other papers of the students around me and I would color the same colors they were coloring. And so, you know, you learn early to not stand out from the crowd. You have to blend in and not attract attention to yourself. So
and
let me ask
sadly, your story is so typical for empaths.
Yes, you know, the thing is, when you're a child, you don't know you're an empath. You just think you're you.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't realize you see things and hear things and do
that
things
other
that
people
other
can't.
People can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is your book for empaths only?
I like to think of it, you know, kind of the unspoken subtitle is Life Skills for an Evolving Species. So it is most definitely for empaths, but it's also for people who are married to an empath, or maybe they know they have empathic children, or maybe they suspect they're an empath, but they're like, all right, what is this empath thing? Because the first half of the book is the bigger picture context that I was talking about, the, you know, the historical evolution of the empath and the context of this ascension process that we're in, the definition and some of those things. But the second half is all practical, rubber meets the road, tools, managing your energy field, what are boundaries, self-care, reclaiming your sense of self. And the book includes 8 guided meditations that are absolutely free. And so there is a lot of good, beefy stuff in this book that can appeal to and assist a wide range of people, because whether you identify as an empath or not, I think the ability to draw boundaries, to understand where we end and the next person begins, to engage in healthy self-care, to be able to say no and ask for what you need, to be able to manage your own energy field. I think those are tools that every human being needs.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you hit on something again, saying no. I know that it's very difficult for a lot of women, especially, to say no. And that was one of the biggest lessons I had to learn was, you know, draw those boundaries. But when I said no and somebody said why, my answer was because, and that's all I have to say. You know, no is a whole paragraph of why no works. And you don't have to explain yourself. And you know, that's probably one of the most powerful things you can step into, and that's embracing no. So, you know, we've been talking all about, you know, what an empath is. What is not an empath? For our audience listening, if they're sitting there going, oh my gosh, am I an empath? Maybe I'm not an empath. What am I? Now we've got them thoroughly confused. What is not an empath?
Mm-hmm. Well, I talk about in the, you know, in this whole two chapter thing of the definition, I do talk a little bit about what an empath is not, to kind of set the stage. And it's not just a feeling. Feelings are transient or fleeting. You know, how we feel about something can change. Feelings are impermanent. So it's not just a feeling that sort of washes through from time to time. You know, the term empath derives from the word empathy, but having empathy and being an empath are two separate things. You know, empathy is a connection that we can feel into, you know, when we're listening to the news or somebody in our family has something bad happen. We can connect with this feeling of empathy, which basically builds a bridge for us to be able to see things from another person's perspective and understand how they're feeling and have a point of commonality. Being an empath, it is a 24/7 thing. It's something you're essentially born with. It's not something you can turn on or off. And I don't mean that to sound intimidating, like, you know, you're constantly drinking from a fire hose, but it is part of our personality. It's part of our makeup. Being an empath is not, you know, witchcraft or a gimmick or a parlor trick or woo-woo or, you know, conjuring of evil forces. It is just a state of being. It's an ability to perceive and interact with subtle energies that not everybody is aware of or understands. So being an empath is not something that you can necessarily turn on and off, but you can certainly manage it. You can get a good toolbox to help you kind of meter the flow, if you will, of, you know, some of the different ways that it presents in each individual person.
Okay, so it's time for another break, but when we come back, we are going to ask Reverend Dr. Stephanie Redfeather about being an empath and how it affects our closest personal relationships. So don't go away. You are listening to DreamVision7RadioNetwork.com, and we'll be right back.
What if dreams can diagnose your life? What if we can meet the love of our life in dreams? Join host Kat O'Keefe Canavas, the number one internationally best-selling author of Dreams That Can Save Your Life, written with Duke University medical doctor Larry Burke. Dreaming Healing is where we'll explore dreams, research, and interpret dreams from you, the caller. Dreaming Healing shows can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern, with live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Come live your dreams out loud with Kat.
Ever had a strange dream? Nautilus Award winner, Dreams That Can Save Your Life, Early Warning Signs of Cancer and Other Diseases, by Kathleen O'Keefe Canavis and Duke University radiologist Dr. Larry Burke, forward by Dr. Bernie Siegel, shares how people like you self-advocated in the face of adversity and won using dreams. Read life-saving dream stories validated by medical reports. Hear how dreams of dead loved ones saved lives. Use interpretations and journaling as roadmaps in your waking world for health, wealth, and love. Dreams That Can Save Your Life, Early Warning Signs of Cancer and Other Diseases. Buy the audio and book at KathleenO'KeefeCannabis.com in English and Italian worldwide and through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other retailers.
Have you met your physician within yet? The Nautilus and multi-award-winning book, Surviving Cancerland, Intuitive Aspects of Healing, is a memoir that takes you down the rabbit hole of healing dreams and interpretations, mixed with conventional medicine and treatments. Listen to the hookah-puffing caterpillar ask, "Who are you?" Dr. Bernie Siegel says Kathleen's story is powerful, honest, and eye-opening. Surviving Cancerland, Intuitive Aspects of Healing by three-time breast cancer survivor Kathleen O'Keefe Canavis. Buy the book and audio at KathleenO'KeefeCannabis.com and worldwide through Amazon and other retailers. Darkest hours to brightest moments, transformation from despair to happiness, and chaos to clarity. Real people, real pain, real healing. Life-threatening illness, death, abusive relationships, divorce, and overcoming addiction are challenges these men and women faced head-on. See how they emerged stronger and happier. Buy the new book, Chaos to Clarity, Sacred Stories of Transformational Change by Reverend Patricia Caginello and Kathleen O'Keefe Canavis. Available on sacredstoriespublishing.com and worldwide through Amazon and other retailers.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Dreaming Healing on DreamVisions7radio.com. I'm your host, Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis, but my friends call me Kat, so I hope you will too. And we are here tonight with Dr. Reverend Stephanie Redfeather. She's the founder and director of Blue Star Temple, and she has just written the book, The Evolutionary Empath. And just before the break, we were talking about how being an empath can affect your closest personal relationships. So, Stephanie, can living with an empath be difficult?
Yes. Totally.
Why did I know that? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, and you know, just because of the way things unfold in human life on the planet right now, we're unconscious usually before we're conscious. And so as empaths, we live from the shadow aspects of these five qualities, usually, because there's no way we can be conscious of them until we are. You know what I mean? It's like you can't work with what you don't know or don't acknowledge. And so for a lot of people, before they recognize they're an empath, before they understand their particular brand of sensitivities, by shadow aspects, it means we lose ourselves in relationship. Our relationships tend to be very codependent. We take on other people's emotions and problems and think they are our own. Like, we don't even know that what we're feeling isn't ours. Mm-hmm. Or we can take it even further and feel like we're responsible for other people's feelings. We overgive. We give and give until there's nothing left, and then we're bitter and resentful. We oftentimes won't stand up for ourselves because we're trying to keep peace and harmony. We don't want to rock the boat. We won't advocate. We won't say no. We'll be a people pleaser. So all of this can show up in romantic relationship, you know, supervisor-supervisee relationship. I mean, anytime you're interacting with another human, it can be very challenging, especially when you don't know you're an empath.
That's all very interesting. So, you know, why do you suppose, you know, I've often wondered this, and maybe I'm wrong in my assumption, but it seems to me that women tend to be more empathic than men. I've run into a few empathic men, and my husband is an empath, but he didn't realize I was an empath, and I didn't realize he was until about 7 or 8 years after we were married. We kept it a secret, and I learned early how to throw up that wall so nobody mm-hmm. else could read it. And then one day it was like, oh my gosh, you are? And he was like, oh, yeah, you are too? So do you think empaths attract to other empaths, or do you think that they don't and they end up together accidentally? Or are there any accidents with us?
Yeah, well, I don't believe in accidents, but if I may, I'd like to address the part you talked about of more women seeming to be mm-hmm. empaths. If you frame this conversation in terms of the masculine and feminine archetypes, mm-hmm. The masculine archetype is associated with the left brain, and so the masculine is very direct, action-oriented, practical, logical, very outward-pointing, if you will, very concrete. The feminine qualities associated with the right brain are much more intuitive, creative, compassionate, spatial, as opposed to linear, abstract. And so if you look at the set of empathic qualities, they pretty much peg the feminine side of the house. You know, if you had to boil it down to one thing, the masculine is more the action principle, the doingness. The feminine is more of the receptive principle and the beingness. And so the empathic qualities land on the feminine side of the scale. And so, you know, while I'm talking about archetypes, what happens a lot of times is the archetypal qualities then get projected onto that gender. And so right now it's more okay for women to be sensitive than it is for men to be sensitive. And so that's why I think it seems like more women are empaths, because it's more okay, it's more allowed, it's more acceptable for them to have more of these, you know, softer qualities, these sensitivities. So I don't know that that necessarily means there are more women empaths, but I have a sense that there probably are right now, you know, but the you know, things are going to shift as our relationship between the masculine and the feminine shifts in our culture.
I think you're right. Yeah, I do. So let's talk about dreams and the empath. Do you think empaths have different dreams than real people, or do you think regular people, or does it not make any difference?
You know, I would just intuitively say I think we dream the same as other people, just in terms of, you know, how our psyches work. But empaths might have more vivid dreams, or they might pay more attention, or they might just be more open and receptive to that form of communication because they are already predisposed to non-traditional forms of communication. And so, you know, that might be a more developed skill, just because it's not maybe as bizarre as it might be to someone else.
I don't think I've ever met an empath that said to me, you know, I don't dream or I can't dream. I found that they always dream, and most of them have very vivid dreams. I find that often people who are going through a shift and maybe they're moving a little more into the empathic realm will start to have more dreams. I've had friends who were very left-brained, extremely left-brained, and they said, I never dream. Never have and probably never will. And then I find that when they're around me a lot and I talk about dreams, they will call me up and say, you know something? I just had a dream that told me I needed to turn in my car, and the dream showed me the exact new type of car I need to get. And wouldn't you know, the engine just fell out of my car and I have to go get a new one? I think, you know, to a degree, like you said at the beginning of the show, we are all empathic, but some of us have shut that down. And I think that when we hang around other empaths, it starts to open back up like a beautiful flower.
Yes, totally. And that's one of the things that I talk about in the book, is you can make a difference just by being who you are, where you are, you know, in terms of contributing to the ascension of human consciousness. It is exactly what you said. When we speak about it, when we hold that frequency and don't hide it, it's almost like we entrain the people around us to that frequency.
I agree. So, you know, it's hard to believe, Stephanie, but we're coming up on the last, like, 4 or 5 minutes of the show. The show went so fast. I just loved it. Tell us how we can find you and find your book.
Yes, of course. My website is bluestartemple.org. And there's a page on there about the book, so you can find a little bit more. I have several short videos that I also created, so you can get a little more information, decide if it resonates with you. It is available online and in stores at whatever your favorite bookseller is. And the audiobook comes out February 11th, so that's very exciting. Yes. And if you go to my website, I have other tools, spiritual tools available. I've got video home study courses and workbooks and meditations and a variety of things for people to interact with, as well as offering workshops and classes and that sort of thing.
Excellent. And for those of you listening that are going right now, you know, we can kind of feel your empathically, we can feel you panicking, going, but I don't have a pencil and paper. I'm in the car. I can't write this down. Just go to my Dreaming Healing website on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, and I have Stephanie's website right there. Underneath her beautiful picture, you can just click on it, and then it'll take you right there. So don't worry if you weren't able to write it down. So we're in the last 4 minutes of this show, and Stephanie, I always give my audience a writer's tip. So in like 1 minute or less, can you give a tip to our audience that's listening that our writer is going, someday I'm going to be published. I know I will.
I love that. Thank you. Trust your intuition. The way my process worked, there are chapters in this book that I didn't even know I was going to write. You know, so if you go by the standard sort of, you know, junior in high school, you know, thesis format, like, okay, put down your primary focus and then three bullet points and create your table of contents. That's not how it works for me. I sort of had an outline and then I write and I let it flow and I let the magic come through me. And there are amazing things in this book that I have to give the credit to Spirit because I'm like, wow, I can't believe I wrote that. But if you can be open to the magic, amazing things can come out of you.
Mm-hmm. And so the dream tip for tonight for all of our listeners is if you are a writer and you want to become a published author also, focus on that before you go to sleep at night. Set that as your intention and ask your spirit guides to come in and guide you on how you can accomplish that goal. You will be amazed what they will do to help you. So thank you so much, Reverend Stephanie Redfeather, for being on the show with us tonight. Your story of how you wrote your book and the stories in the book are just amazing, and I know they're going to help our audience. And if you, the audience, would like to know more about our guest, again, go to my Dreaming Healing Archive page, and you will see the show guests with their website link right there, and you can just click on her link. So until next time, remember, everybody dreams, but some dreams save lives. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for joining us this evening, and a big thanks to our producer. Tune in next time to Dreaming Healing for more cutting-edge research, live dream interpretations, and stories with radio host and award-winning author Cat O'Keefe Canavas. Listen every Tuesday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time with call-in live shows on the first and third evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Remember, everyone dreams, but some dreams save lives. Live your dreams. Find more about Kat at KathleenO'KeefeCannabis.com. That's Kathleen with a K. O-K-E-E-F-E-K-A-N-A-V-O-S, or The Queen of Dreams on Google search.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe. Relax and enjoy. Let life flow.